We turn to the go-to expert on this subject. He has a very popular YouTube channel, loads of great videos on there. Author who's written a bunch of books, and he happens to be a self-described narcissistic sociopath. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome H.G. Tudor. Mr. Tudor, thank you for joining me on the radio. Mr. Tudor? Oh, I got you there. Hello, sir?
I'm here.
Oh, good.
I'm here.
Yeah, we have you now. So, Mr. Tudor, what exactly is a narcissist? When we use that term, a lot of times it seems like we throw that term around just to apply to people that we don't like. But what actually does it mean?
Yes, well, the word's often used in the idea of somebody that is excessively vain, spends a lot of time preening himself in front of the mirror, thinks that they're God's gift to the other sex or the same sex, if that they're way inclined. Somebody that has a voracious appetite for showing off and selfies and so forth. And that's just one form of narcissism. A narcissist is an individual that has narcissism, which essentially is a self-defense mechanism. It's a coping mechanism. And it causes the narcissist to view the world through a distortion lens, in effect, to see the world from a different perspective to the way that a non-narcissist does. And the way that that distortion field operates is to cause the individual who is a narcissist to see threats to their control, to see themselves as superior to other people, so that they feel that they're in control because they are above and better than people. It causes them to believe that people are causing problems for them. So many narcissists experience paranoia. But in essence, it's a self-defense mechanism which causes the narcissist, usually unknowingly, but sometimes with awareness, to seek four things: control over people, fuel, which is basically a response from somebody, whether it's saying, I love you, to the narcissist, or giving a gift to the narcissist, or shouting and screaming and telling the narcissist that you hate them. I call it fuel. That's what powers the narcissist. It gives us validation. We also seek character traits from people. We acquire bits of them, bolt them onto ourselves. And finally, what I call residual benefits, namely money, somewhere to live, a great sex life, a facade, access to contacts. And everything that the narcissist does or doesn't do or says or doesn't say is linked to the pursuit of those four prime aims. And the narcissism is there to enable the narcissist to get those things so the narcissist can function. Non-narcissists function essentially through a mishmash of empathic and narcissistic traits and having emotional empathy for other people in varying amounts. We don't have any emotional empathy. And instead, your behavior as a non-narcissist, Frank, is regulated by those empathic and narcissistic traits that you have, which you have both, and some degree of emotional empathy guides your behavior. Our narcissism guides our behavior instead.
When did you come to realize that you were a narcissist?
Well, I always knew that I was different, set apart, and that I basically got off on manipulating other people and causing problems for them. And I've known that for as long as I can recall, even as a child. I became aware that I was one as a consequence of an ex-girlfriend who was a psychology graduate who told me that I was both narcissist and psychopath. And so I said to her, it's very interesting, how do you reach that conclusion? And I listened to her, and much of what she said resonated. Of course, I didn't say to her, oh, you're absolutely right, that's what I am. Because to do so would have transferred power to her by saying she's right. Because, of course, the term narcissist, psychopath is stigmatic. So if I'd accepted what she'd said, I would have given control and power to her. I'm not going to do that. But much of what she said did make sense to me. And I went away and did some reading. And that caused me to realize, I now have a label for what I am. And in later life, I was diagnosed as such by psychologists.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with H.G. Tudor. You can check out his website, NARCsite.com, NARCsite.com. Some great videos on there and some links to some great books and some other great resources. So given your own narcissism and given the narcissism of other people that fit the desire for the four criteria that you described, does it make it difficult to have a relationship with someone that is a narcissist?
Yes, it does, particularly a romantic, intimate relationship. The problem is that when we first identify an individual that caters to those four criteria, the prime aims, driven by our narcissism, we go hell for leather to make them ours. So our narcissism causes us to believe that they are the best thing in sliced bread, that they've been sent from heaven, and that we believe that we are in love with them. And often a narcissist will say, after just 2 weeks of dating, I love you, or I've loved you from afar for years, I just never told you. That isn't the case. But the narcissism has made the narcissist believe that. And the narcissist is full of compliments, perhaps is very supportive, buying gifts, very interesting, exciting, this whirlwind of energy, and goes through the seduction period. It's also called love bombing. But it's all false. The narcissist, where they're unaware, believes it's genuine, but it's not. It's driven by the narcissism because we have to draw you in. Mm. So if I went into a bar and I saw a pretty lady and I sat down next to her and said, hello, my name's H.G. Tudor. I'm a narcissistic psychopath. How do you fancy being my girlfriend and being abused? She'd undoubtedly scream, throw a dirty martini in my plate and run away. So I've lost control of her. So I have to go and present myself as something that appeals to her. So we often mirror people. We feign an interest in the things they're interested in. We mirror body language. And it's all done to draw people in. And then when we've got you, we embed you as our intimate partner primary source, which means you supply those four criteria better than anybody else. If you think of it in terms of a hunter, our prey is the one that's going to give us the best food for the longest period of time. Unfortunately for that victim, we get bored of you, or you do things which threaten our control. Invariably, you do it inadvertently, because we are calibrated to pick up on the slightest shift that signals to us that there's a threat to control. So, for instance, if somebody doesn't make you a cup of tea, Frank, you're probably not bothered about it. You didn't even ask for one. But for a narcissist, that signals that the narcissist isn't important. So if their spouse doesn't make them a cup of tea, that unconsciously threatens their control. And the narcissism jumps in as a self-defense mechanism and motivates that narcissist to assert control over his spouse by making him feel furious and telling him she's a horrible, selfish woman. So he says, oi, Sandra Selfish, where's my cup of tea? You're always making brews for yourself, but never for me. I'm sick and tired of how selfish you are. Now, that's not true. She regularly makes him cups of tea. Mm. But in that moment, his narcissism, through that distortion field, has revised history to make him believe that she has always failed to make him cups of tea, so that his fury erupts. And so he asserts, and she goes, oh, sorry, yes, I'll make you a cup of tea. And as soon as she says that, she has signaled she's under control. She's given fuel. So you can already see that in a relationship, if the narcissist kicks off over the fact that he's not been made a cup of tea, how might he react when his narcissist suggests that his wife's cheating? She's not, but she said hello to the neighbor over the garden gate. That means her attention is focused on somebody else and not the narcissist. That threatens the narcissist's sense of control. Narcissism tells the narcissist she's flirting with the neighbor. She's having an affair. He gets furious. He becomes jealous. He confronts her. Oh, so what's going on between you and Fred? What do you mean? I saw you there making eyes at him over the garden gate, you know, showing off your cleavage, etc. I wasn't. I was just talking to him. But in the narcissist world, he honestly believes that's what she was doing, because the perspective that he has been altered by his narcissism to drive him. In the same way that your throat gets dry, Frank, and you might feel a little bit lightheaded when you're thirsty, that's your body telling you, go and hydrate. With the narcissist, the narcissism has to do something to motivate the narcissist to assert control. So in a relationship, that leads to it being tempestuous. You are, many people talk about, treading on eggshells. The slightest thing that you do or don't do can cause the narcissist unconsciously to feel a threat to control, and thus you suffer some kind of devaluing behavior. You're insulted. The narcissist goes and cheats. The narcissist physically assaults you. The narcissist gives you circular conversations, word salads. They triangulate you with people and objects and so forth. So it makes for a very, very, very difficult relationship, and it's not just romantically. You can see by extension that can happen in a work environment, a social environment, within a familial environment. But the main one where it causes the most problems is the romantic one.
When, let's say somebody's listening to you, and we're talking with H.G. Tudor, you could check out his website, narcsite.com, and some of the terrific books that are there on this subject. And they're not sure if they themselves might fit the description of the kind of personality you're talking about. How does someone know if they themselves are a narcissist?
Quite a simple test. If you think you're one, you're not. It works like this. If you're an aware narcissist such as I, you won't ask the question. You know what you are. And most narcissists are unaware, so they would never ask themselves the question. The narcissism doesn't allow it to happen. And it's usually people who aren't narcissists who fear that they are. The unaware narcissist does not countenance that he's a narcissist because they're incapable of self-reflection. He doesn't sit down and think, all my romantic relationships seem to end after about a year. I lose friends, and my working environment is haphazard. Could I be a narcissist? He will never, ever think like that because his narcissism won't let him. Because if he does that, he's accepting that he's at fault. And if he accepts that he's at fault, what has he done? He's lost control.
Well,
so narcissism shields him.
So, Mr. Tudor, how in your case, then, can you be a self-aware narcissist? By your own admission, you've said that you are, but how does that recognition of your state of narcissism not denarcify you?
Because I know the way that I operate. So, for instance, I know that I need fuel. I know that I need to manipulate people. I have no sense of guilt or remorse or conscience. For me, the means always justifies the ends. I find it entertaining to make people's lives a misery.
I understand.
But that doesn't, my awareness doesn't denarcify me, so to speak. My awareness consolidates it. I already know what I am. I'm not wondering. I have complete conviction as to what I am. I haven't sat there and thought, maybe I'm a bit manipulative. What does that mean? No, I know I'm manipulative, and I always know I have been. Whereas somebody who thinks they might be a narcissist, but they're not, they go, sometimes I might manipulate. Perhaps I'm a narcissist. They're not certain of it. Mm. If you're not certain, then you can't be.
You wrote a book, and people could check it out on your website, 50 Things That You Should Not Do With a Narcissist. Give us an example of one or two.
Okay. You should not expect to enjoy your birthday when you're with a narcissist because the birthday is meant to be a day all about you. That means the spotlight's on you and it's not on us. That means we don't have control. So basically, the narcissist, where you are in devaluation, will spoil your birthday. So that might range from not turning up for your birthday celebration, buying you a rubbish present, causing a scene earlier on the day before your party, turning up drunk at your party and insulting the guests, sticking your fist into the birthday cake. Take your pick. But don't expect to enjoy your birthday when you're involved with a narcissist, because it's your occasion. And that means it's about, if it's about you, it's not about us. And that means it offends our sense of control. All the other people turning up at the birthday, their fuel is going to the birthday girl or the birthday boy. That's our fuel. It's our inalienable right to have that fuel. You're not entitled to it. Of course, you don't need it, but you're not a narcissist. But it should be flowing to us. Everybody bringing you presents, that's fuel for you, not for us. Praising you, saying, oh, you look nice in that dress. Wishing you a happy birthday. And that makes us feel unimportant, small, vulnerable, and weak because the fuel's going elsewhere and it's threatening our sense of control. So our narcissism says, in the unconscious, for an unaware narcissist, you must now do something, sir or miss narcissist, to counter this. And that means spoiling the birthday, in effect, or not turning up, because that then enables control to be asserted. and fuel. If we're there and we cause a scene, everybody's eyes are on us. So don't expect to enjoy your birthday. In terms of another thing that you ought not to do with a narcissist is to be able to expect that you can manage the relationship with a narcissist. You can't. We are designed to control you. We are not designed to be controlled. Our narcissism is like the suspension on a car. It's repeatedly, moment by moment by moment by moment by moment, calibrating, recalibrating to assert control. So if you try and manage it, you will do something which offends our sense of control and we will lash out at you. Even if you think to yourself, I will be supine, I will throw myself on the floor in front of the narcissist and basically bend over backwards, you'll still offend our control because you won't do something quickly enough. And often you can become painted black because somebody else in our fuel matrix, that's the matrix of all the people that we associate with, they become white, so you become black and you have no control over that. So don't expect to be able to manage the relationship in a successful manner because you can't. It's impossible. And in so doing, all that will happen is you will become maybe beaten up. Your self-esteem will be eroded. Your self-confidence will plummet. You'll exhaust yourself and your head will be in pieces.
You
are just two of the things you ought not to do.
You've also written about exorcism, not purging demons, but purging narcissism. Let's say someone is a self-aware narcissist. How can they or how can those around them conduct a sort of a personality exorcism and purge narcissism from someone's being?
Okay. As I've explained, we are the ones that have to control. And you can't control us. You're not allowed to. The only person that you, as the victim of the narcissist, can do is control yourself. And that means removing yourself and purging us from your life. So it means you don't spend any physical time with us. You no longer communicate with us. You ensure that we can't communicate with you. So that means changing your telephone number, for example, coming off social media. It means that you get rid of all of the reminders of the narcissist. So that picture of the Empire State Building that we bought you for your birthday, sell it, give it away, put it in storage. Chair that we always sat in by the window that now reminds you of us, if you've ended the relationship, get rid of the chair, turn it round, put it in a different room. The fragrances that we use that remind you of us, get rid. Songs, delete them. If you hear a song playing, switch it off. And you have to purge the photographs, the emails, the love letters, remove all of those things. This is all set out in the book that you just mentioned there, exorcism. You have to remove the narcissist from every facet of your life. You avoid, for a period of time, going to the places that you went to, narcissist, so you're not reminded of them. And also, so that you don't bump into the narcissist, you change your routines. Now, many people might ask, why should I do all that? Why should I be the one that makes those changes because of this awful person? Well, you don't have to. If you don't, it'll take you a lot longer to get over the narcissist. Because not only will the narcissist be trying to come back to you, because in our minds you belong to us, we also have these repeated reminders which will act as triggers. And it will remind you of what you once had, both good and bad. And that makes your progress to recovery and freedom all the more slower. The point is, you have to ensure through a total no contact regime that you keep away from the narcissist, you keep the narcissist away from you, and you remove all trace of the narcissist. When we get rid of you, your persona non grata, this is where you get your revenge over us. You make us persona non grata so that you ensure that you have nothing more to do with any shape or
form. Mr. Tudor, we're going to have to end it there. A fascinating discussion, and I have pages worth of questions for you. I hope you'll come back in the future and we can continue the discussion.
I would be delighted to, Frank. Let me know when you'd like to do that and we can talk further. Thank you for inviting me on today.
Thank you. And if people want to check out H.G. Tudor's website or his books that are available on the website, you can go to narcsite.com. You can also access the YouTube channel through there, H.G. Tudor.